Today we're going to cover the 27th chapter of the book of Acts, and I'll be perfectly honest, a lot of the terminology and the kinds of things that are described here, I don't understand because I'm not a sailor. I stay away from the ocean assiduously because if I even get close to the ocean, I start to throw up. So I can't imagine what this must have been like for the Apostle Paul. Not only is he on the ocean en route to Rome, but he's a prisoner en route to Rome who knows that he's going to have to stand before Caesar when he gets to Rome. Now, I haven't been to court a whole lot of times. I've been to court a few times because I got speeding tickets a long time ago. I don't do that anymore, but there was a time when I drove like my hair was on fire. And at the time I was working for a law firm, and I thought, well, this going to court, this is no big deal. And so I walk into court, they call my name, I had to stand up, and they said, are you Mr. Cruz? And I said, yes. It was awful. I can't imagine what Paul is going through. I mean, I might have gotten a $100 fine for my speeding ticket. Paul is looking at the prospect of death. So he is a prisoner going to Rome, facing the prospect of death, and he's on the ocean. What could be worse? So we're going to begin this morning, and we're just going to kind of read through the 27th chapter. And then at the end, I'd like to talk about what I think are three really important takeaways if you're thinking about what's going on here in the 27th chapter. So this is chapter 27. And I'll just read most of this and make a couple of comments as we go so that we can get through this chapter. It was determined that we should sail for Italy. They delivered Paul and certain other prisoners to a centurion named Julius of the Augustan band. This Augustan band was apparently something that was pretty special. It was like special forces. So this is a pretty important centurion. They embarked on a ship of Adramyttium, which was about to sail to the places on the coast of Asia. We put to sea, Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. And apparently the us includes Luke. Luke does never mention himself, but the impression that I have is that Luke and Aristarchus and Paul are together on this ship. The next day they touched at Sidon. Julius treated Paul kindly, gave him leave to go to his friends and refresh himself, which would have been unusual, that Paul is treated this kindly. Romans did not treat their prisoners well. Romans just pretty much mistreated everyone that they came in contact with. So Paul is allowed to go and see his friends and refresh himself. And from reading about his travels, we know that he's been through this area. So Paul probably knows people who are in Sidon. They're probably Christians that he's converted or has influenced. Putting to sea from thence, from Sidon, we sailed under the lee of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. When we'd sailed across the sea, which is off Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. There, the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing for Italy, and he put us therein. Apparently, when they left Caesarea, Paul, in the control of Julian, that was just a temporary mode of transportation until they could get to a place where they could catch a bigger ship that was going to Rome. This apparently was a little coastal ship, and they put him into a bigger ship so that he could go to Rome. It was not uncommon for the Alexandrian ships to run that route going to Rome, and not uncommon at all for them to be carrying wheat, which we'll see a little bit later. The Romans imported a lot of wheat from Egypt. The Romans imported most of their food. So they find a ship from Alexandria that's sailing for Italy, and he put us therein. When we'd sailed slowly many days and had come with difficulty over against Cnidus, the wind not further suffering us, we sailed under the lee of Crete, over against Salamone. This Salamone was apparently a promontory on the western side of the island of Crete. Now, if the conditions had been favorable, this is a trip that they would have made in about a day. But this is, the conditions are about as unfavorable as they could be. With difficulty coasting along, coasting means that they were hugging the coast. With difficulty coasting along it, we came to a certain place called Fair Havens, nigh unto which was the city of Lasea. Fair Havens is a place that was a fairly well protected area, but there really wasn't a city there. Fair Havens wasn't a port. It was just kind of a place where ships could get out of the wind just a little bit. When much time was spent, the voyage was now dangerous because the fast was now already gone by. Paul admonished them. Remember, Paul had been in a hurry to get to Jerusalem ahead of Pentecost. This fast that he's talking about is probably the Day of Atonement. That would be the fast that the Jews would think about after the Day of Pentecost. So it's the fall of the year. And from everything that I can read historically, this was not a good time to be on the Mediterranean, just because it was a terrible weather time. Paul said to them, "Sirs, I perceive that the voyage will be with much injury and much loss, not only of the lading in the ship, but also of our lives." And some people commenting on this said, Paul probably knew that this was a bad time to be out on the Mediterranean because he'd been traveling in that area. And he's not a seaman necessarily, but he knows this is not a good time to be traveling in that area. Some other people suggested that this was through inspiration that Paul knew this. And we'll see later that inspiration plays a part in this. So I don't know, but Paul is cautioning them, let's not undertake this voyage. But the centurion, Julian, gave more heed to the master and to the owner of the ship. The master was a guy that steered the ship. He was the steerer, the helmsman, if you will. He was probably in charge of the crew on the ship. And the owner of the ship would have been somebody else, somebody that had a vested interest in the cargo that they were carrying. So you had the master seaman who is in charge of sailing the ship. And then you had the owner of the ship. He's the one that has control of the cargo on the ship. And they're saying, no, we can make it. Paul says this is a bad time to be going. They said we can make it. That, you know, sometimes seamen, even when it's not a good time to be sailing, will sail because they have to get their cargo where they're wanting to get their cargo. I don't know if that was the case or not, but I do know that the centurion listened to them instead of listening to Paul. should have listened to Paul. Because the haven, that fair haven, was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to put to sea on from thence, if by any means we could reach Phoenix, and there's a good port there, and winter there, which is a haven of Crete, looking northeast and southeast. Now, again, I'm not a sailor. I don't know why that would necessarily be important, but that's what they decide to do. Then there is this storm. And this storm is described in some detail. So let's read about the storm that hit them. When the south wind blew softly, supposing that we had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and they sailed along Crete close into shore. So the winds abated a little bit. And they thought, okay, we can make it, supposing that they had obtained their purpose. But after no long time, there beat down from it a tempestuous wind, which is called Euroquilo. And some have suggested that the etymology of this word, and I don't know, is something like a hurricane. I really don't know. I don't know anything about that wind. I couldn't find anything about this wind, other than some people say it's a hurricane. And the hurricane is important because it just blows in all kinds of directions. It's not a wind that's blowing steadily in one direction, but it's just circling. When the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven. So we gave up trying to make any progress, and we just tried to keep the ship afloat. I don't know if you've ever watched The Perfect Storm, the movie about Clooney. What's his first name? Yeah, George Clooney. He's a master on a fishing boat, and it eventually capsizes because it gets caught in a hurricane. Well, eventually they got to the point where all they tried to do was keep the ship pointed into the biggest waves. And that was about all they could do. They couldn't make way. They couldn't really steer. They couldn't really do anything other than just try to stay alive. Running under the lee of a small island called Cauda, we were able with difficulty to secure the boat. These ships would have boats on them that were kind of landing craft. They were boats, and sometimes they would just tow them. They would leave them in the water like a dinghy. But the wind becomes so bad that they finally pull this little boat in and put it on the ship. When they'd hoisted it up, they used helps, undergirding the ship, fearing lest they should be cast upon Syrtis. They lowered the gear and so were driven. These sailing ships, they're basically wooden ships. And what they would do is they would put straps or ropes or chains sometimes underneath of the ship and kind of pull it up tight onto the top part of the ship so that they could prevent the bottom from just kind of coming apart. So that's probably what he's referring to. They used helps to undergird the ship. I can't imagine what it would have been like to try to get that underneath of the ship back up onto the top so that you could try to keep the ship together. As we labored exceedingly with the storm, the next day they began to throw the freight overboard. So they're doing everything they can to lighten the ship. Third day, they cast out with their own hands the tackling of the ship. And some have said that this would mean that they took down the mast of the ship because you didn't want the weight up high. So they would take down even the mast of the ship. When neither sun nor stars shone upon us for many days, no small tempest lay upon us. All hope that we should be saved was now taken away. This is a major storm, and it looks like everything is lost. When they'd been long without food, Paul stood forth in the midst of them. He said, "Sirs, you should have hearkened unto me and not have set sail from Crete and gotten this injury and lost." I don't think this is Paul saying, "I told you so." I think he's just reminding them that I did know what I was talking about, and we're in this pickle now. He says, "I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of life among you, but only the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of the God whose I am, whom also I serve, saying, 'Fear not, Paul, thou must stand before Caesar, and lo, God hath granted thee all them that sail with thee.'" So the angel appears to Paul. He says, "Don't worry, Paul. I'm going to get you to Rome." Now that, you know, small comfort. "Don't worry. I will get you to your court date." And because he's going to get Paul there, he's going to get the rest of the crew there. And we'll talk about that as a takeaway in just a minute. Now, I don't know who the angel was. Sometimes Jesus is presented as an angel delivering a message from God. It could have been some other angel. It probably was a reference to a vision, because that's the way God communicated then. "Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer. I believe God that it shall be even so as it hath been spoken unto me. But we must be cast upon a certain island." When the 14th night was come, as we were driven to and fro in the Sea of Adria, about midnight the sailors surmised that they were drawing near to some country. They sounded, they found 20 fathoms. After a little space they sounded again, they found 15 fathoms. Fearing lest haply they should be cast ashore on rocky ground, they let go 4 anchors from the stern and wished for the day. Again, not a sailor. I don't know what they were trying to do, but they're probably trying to do everything they can to control the ship, because apparently they are entering shallower waters. Just so you'll know, a fathom is 6 feet. It's the length from a man's fingertip to his fingertip across here. So a fathom is 6 feet. If it was 20 fathoms, that's 120 feet. And then it got down to 15 fathoms. So now it's 90 feet. So they're getting worried that the sea is getting shallower. They're approaching. They probably have no idea where they are at this point. They've just been driven about by this storm. They don't know what's going on. "As the sailors were seeking to flee out of the ship," so the sailors know what's going on, and the sailors figure, "We're going to run aground and we're going to get off this big ship onto something that we can control a little bit." So they let the boat down into the sea. That was that little dinghy that they'd been pulling behind them, that they pulled up onto the ship. Now they let it down into the sea, under color, as though they would lay out anchors from the foreship. So they were acting like, "Hey, we're just putting out more anchors to help control the ship." And in reality, the rats were deserting a sinking ship. So they put down the boat. They're getting ready to get into the boat and sail away. Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Except these abide in the ship, you can't be saved. Got to stay on the boat." The soldiers cut away the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. So the seamen know what's going on. They're trying to desert the ship. The soldiers, probably most of them, couldn't swim. They're a little worried, because Paul says the only way we're going to be safe is if we stay on this ship. Well, the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take some food, saying, this day is the 14th day that you wait and continue fasting and have taken nothing. Wherefore, I beseech you, take some food. This is for your safety. There shall not a hair perish from the head of any of you. When he had said this and had taken bread, he gave thanks to God in the presence of all, and he broke it and began to eat. Then they were all of good cheer, and themselves also took food. When all were in the ship, 216 souls, so 276 people on the ship. When they'd eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing the wheat into the sea. So they're just, now they're down to throwing over the bread. That's getting pretty bad. Then there's the shipwreck. The inevitable happens. When it was day, we knew not the land. They didn't know where they were, but they perceived a certain bay with a beach. And they took counsel whether they could drive the ship upon it. So they're going to try to head for this beach and see if they can beach the ship. Casting off the anchors, apparently they would have helped to slow down the ship. They left them in the sea and at the same time loosed the bands of the rudders. So they had apparently, at some point in this storm, they actually tied down the rudders because they remember, they'd pretty much given up. They're just being driven. And so they took the bands off the rudders. They hoisted the foresail to the wind. This would have been a little sail on the front, and they made for the beach. But lighting on a place where two seas meet, they ran the vessel aground. And the foreship struck and remained unmovable, but the stern began to break up because of the violence of the waves. So they're stuck. The ocean is just beating the ship apart. They're going to lose the ship. The soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. So the sailors wanted to desert the ship, with everybody drowned. The soldiers wanted to kill all the prisoners, lest they should escape. And remember, the way the Romans looked at things, if you were a guard and you had a prisoner to take care of, if he escaped, you took his place. So they're scared. They don't want the prisoners to escape. And I think back to the Philippian jailer. Remember the jailer who woke up and discovered that all the prisoners were free? He's scared. Paul says, don't be afraid. Don't harm yourself. We're all still here. So that's the situation that the soldiers are in. The centurion, the guy who's in charge, Julian, desiring to save Paul, stayed them from their purpose and commanded that they who could swim should cast themselves overboard and get first to land. And then the rest, some on planks, some on other things from the ship. And so it came to pass that they all escaped safe to the land. So they get through this horrible storm. They get through the shipwreck. And now they're on this island. They don't know really where they are. So let's think about some takeaways from this story. I mean, why is this story in here in the first place? What are we supposed to learn from this? So let me just open it up. What do you think are some takeaways that you can get from this event? Yeah, Ted.
You might think you're the master of what you do or your profession, but you don't know it all.
That's true. That's true. Good point. You may know a lot, but you don't know everything that there is to know. Any other takeaways?
You have to trust in the Lord no matter what, and you just put your whole faith in Christ and let him take charge and go with the flow, so to speak.
That's a bad pun given what's going on here. Go with the flow. But I see your point, Jimmy, and it's a good one. You gotta put it into the hands of the Lord. Yeah, Carol.
God has plans for you. He's gonna achieve no matter what. So even if everything looks absolutely the darkest point in your life and you don't think you can go through, if God has more plans for you and another place for you to be, he'll get you there.
Yeah. I was talking just a minute ago about Megan Lawrence. And, she has such a great attitude. She's going to be starting another round of chemo tomorrow. And Margaret was saying, what a great attitude she has. She's worried about losing her hair, of course, but she felt like she had hope. And what made her so sad was that there are other people who are facing cancer like she is, and they don't have any hope. And that has to be very, very, very difficult. So, I mean, we can get it down to the brass tacks. And that's really where these guys are. Life is on the line. Other comments, other takeaways.
I find it interesting that Julius shows a lot of kindness toward Paul. And Paul is a prisoner here. And it's really funny when Paul receives whatever vision it is that he receives. It's not necessarily recorded for us. It's him retelling it that's recorded. And him, then obviously he has some type of standing among these people that as a prisoner, he could say, you know what, take heart, go ahead and eat, don't worry about it. God appeared to me in a vision or through an angel, and we're all going to be saved. Yes, we're going to lose the ship. But you are not going to lose your life. And he had credibility with them.
Yeah.
I mean, later they were trying to get in the lifeboat and get out of there. And then the soldiers were trying to figure out what on earth they're going to do. But Julius intervenes again and says, no, let's not do that. Let's all stay together. He was giving a lot of credibility to Paul, who, you know, I find that really interesting because he was a prisoner, yet he had a lot of credibility with these people.
Right.
With everybody he interacted with, even in the chapter before, Agrippa said to Festus, this man could have been set free if he'd not appealed to Caesar. He said, he didn't do anything wrong. He's fine. He's a man of God, and leave him alone. But now he has to go and appear before Caesar, and God is going to get him there, like Carol said. No matter what happens. And I can imagine how bleak it must have seemed. And maybe even to Paul at one point, until he receives this vision, he gets this angel, and then he tells the story and he tells him, don't worry about it. We're going to be okay. Take comfort.
Yeah.
That's hard to hear when you're in the middle of something like that.
Yeah. And I think the takeaway as I worded it, and maybe I'm thinking about something a little bit different than you are, but wicked men can be disposed to fair treatment of just men. And it's because they recognize that they're just. I don't know if you've seen the Rockwell illustration that I have in my house. It's in the family room. It's the grandmother, or probably this is the way I interpret it. It's the grandmother and her grandson who are traveling, and they're in this little diner. And they bow their heads to give thanks for the meal that they're about to eat. And all these old grizzled guys, the guys that work around that area, they're paying attention to what's going on. Yeah, Carol.
Well, I think it also is a reminder for us to speak up even if we're not heard. Because the first time you spoke up, he was not heard.
Okay, good point.
The second time he was heard because he had a vision, but then he was still speaking up, and whether they listened to him or not,
good point.
His responsibility was to speak up.
Good point. I didn't get that takeaway. I missed that takeaway, but it's a good one. And so, you know, don't ever be afraid to be a just person. A lot of times people will respect that. Even wicked people will respect that. They may not agree with you. They may not necessarily like what you're saying, but they will recognize it. So the centurion, you know, twice in this chapter, the centurion has allowed Paul some leeway because of who he is. He allows him to be refreshed by his friends, and then he won't allow the prisoners to be killed. So I think there's something to be said here. This is a takeaway that I saw that kind of corresponds to what Carol was saying earlier. When God works out his plan, and he will work out his plan, when he has a plan, it will come to pass. But remember, wicked people sometimes benefit when God carries out his plan for the good people that he's taking care of. And I see that a lot in our culture. I see it a lot in society. God's taking care of his people, and wicked people get a benefit. It's kind of like it slops off on them. So God, I don't think God in this case is terribly concerned about the sailors or the soldiers. But he is concerned about Paul, and he's going to take care of Paul. And so other people benefit. Have you seen that happen in your life? God's taking care of you. And it seems like wicked people get to benefit. Now, wicked people misinterpret that. That's undeniably true. Wicked people can misinterpret this. But God had a plan here. God's plan was to take Paul to Rome. I don't know if the storm was part of the plan. I don't know that. It would be speculation for me to say that God made the storm happen so that Paul could have an opportunity to tell those sailors and soldiers about Jesus, about the one who was protecting him. Maybe, but I don't know. Yeah, Ted.
Verse 24, when Paul's recounting his vision, says, don't be afraid, Paul, you must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who are sailing with you. This is Paul telling these people who are in charge of him that God has put their lives against him.
That's true. It's an excellent point. Paul is the one that, or God is the one who is in charge, ultimately. Okay? So, the sailors and the soldiers are going to benefit from this. How might they misinterpret that?
You did a really good job keeping us from dying. But, yeah, the ship was wrecked, but we did a good job saving ourselves.
Okay.
It was a lot of work.
Okay. It was our doing that got us through this? Our skill, our sailing ability? Maybe?
Or luck.
Or could be just luck.
Salvation by association.
Yeah, okay. Okay. That
we kind of fall into that trap.
Sure. I'm probably going to benefit because I'm with other people that God is trying to benefit. And I think I'll stay with them. Then there's no real basis for that kind of reasoning.
I think sometimes as children, we fall into that trap with our parents.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah, Carol?
I think that one of the possible reasons for the storm is not only could he minister to the soldiers, but it gave witness in Rome about what he was able to do, his predictions, his life-saving stuff. It really would go through the whole ranks because it's from the head to the bottom of the soldiers, and he was going to be there. So it really validated God's word and his position with God.
Could be. But again, I mean, that's something to think about. Maybe that's the case. I can't say that it was, but I can't say that it wasn't. It reminds me of what happened. Remember when Onesimus ran away from Philemon? Onesimus was Philemon's slave, and he ran away. He went to Rome, thought he could find anonymity among this huge population of people. And he had the misfortune of running into his old master's best friend. So he runs into Paul. And Paul says to Onesimus, I don't know, maybe he ran away so I could convert him. I don't know. A lot of things happen in our lives where we need to be open to the idea that God could be doing something with us. We can't say for sure. We can't say that it's not. But we need to be open to the idea that God is doing something with us. And remember, God says, I'm going to take you to Rome. This is my plan. I'm going to work it out. Was there a miracle here? Yes, probably no miracle. It was just the way things go. Last one. God's announced plan does not preclude our efforts. And this is related to what I was just talking about. No man was to be lost. That was God's plan. They had to stay on the ship. So God says no man will be lost. That doesn't mean you can do whatever you want to willy-nilly. God said he's going to save you. God said you have to stay on the ship. Okay? So you're going to have to make an effort. Now, your effort is not what was going to save you. Remember that. Your effort is not what's going to keep you alive. But you still have to make effort. And I think that's an important lesson for us to remember as well. God's plan is going to work out. The church will be the light for the world. It will be. We have to make effort to make that happen. But our effort is not what makes it happen. It's God's plan. God is the benefactor, not our effort and skill. Our effort in response to God is sometimes counterintuitive. Stay on the ship. It's running aground. Don't save yourself by getting into that little boat. And I think sometimes our effort needs to be counterintuitive. I know that it needs to be countercultural. There's no question about that. But sometimes our efforts need to be counterintuitive. In other words, listen to God, not necessarily listen to just what seems good to me. Any other takeaways that you see here? Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about the Roman soldiers and their sole willingness to kill all the prisoners and throw them over or whatever they're going to do to them. And, you know, what they did to Jesus. And I'm thinking, man, I would hate to be in Jerusalem, you know, about like 80 AD. Because, wow, there was no mercy going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Excellent point.